Today in our hot seat, we have Gary Kalatzi, CEO of Alexa Translations AI. Hi, Gary. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Great, Gary. So if you're ready, let's do this.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are Nimzi's Inga Boonen, Chief Growth Officer, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
In one sentence, what is it that your company does?
AI-powered translations.
When you were a child, what was the type of job that you dreamed of having or expected to have?
Well, my father is a pharmacist, so I was inclined to think medicine. So I thought I wanted to be a doctor. As I got a bit older, I wanted to be a plastic surgeon, so a more specific type of doctor. And instead, I decided to be a lawyer and do traditional practice, but do translation and focus on the legal financial, where the lawyer background came in handy.
That's very interesting. Yeah, career choice. So how both like medicine and law, let's say to me, it's two very difficult topics to study. So how come that you then decide to go into translations?
So during the Kosovo crisis, I was in Albania, and this was the war that happened in Kosovo in the late 90s. So I volunteered at a refugee camp because of my language skills at the time. And from there, I got a job with Save the Children and did some work with UNICEF as an interpreter. So I stumbled into the language industry at a sort of relatively young age and thought, I think I could do this as a side job. My undergraduate degree was in biochemistry, sort of as the precursor to medicine. When you study in Canada, you can't go directly into medicine like you can in most countries in Europe. And being in the science, I was always good at the sciences. So I thought naturally I must be a doctor, because if you're good at sciences, then you have to do that. But on the side was an interpreter, and then thought I could start a small translation company out of this. And that was the inspiration.
When you're not working, how do you spend your time?
So I'm a bit of a culture, language, anthropology nerd. So I'm all about the podcast and learning about sort of the world, how it evolves, how the history made us what we are today. And Sarah and I were just chatting about Babylon, the show that is in German originally. And to me, it was particularly interesting in itself because it was specifically happening in Berlin in the 1920s. Really interesting place. So that's between that and some travel where I can match the two, it's the ideal way for me to spend my time.
Fantastic. And so that was Babylon, Berlin, right?
Berlin, that's right.
Okay. And you told us before that you will be traveling to Germany. Which are other countries that you would like to visit?
I have a long list. I have a long list, but high on my priority. I have not been to Latin America. I've done Central America. Haven't done Latin America yet. So Argentina is high up on that list. Mm. I've been to China, but it's the only place in Asia I've been to. So Japan is high on that priority list. I really would like to do Morocco and Australia. And I'll stop there only because the list is long, but I had to prioritize.
Yeah, those are amazing destinations. And my last question already, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Don't confuse activity for progress. And this was an investment banker that I met early on. And he said, look, you know, early in your career, you just think, let me do this. And sort of just being busy, you feel like at the end of the day, oh, look at all these things I did during the day. Mm-hmm. But he said, you should be busy. You should be doing things, but do them strategically. Learn that just being busy isn't enough. You have to be busy with the right things. Mm-hmm.
That makes so much sense. Yeah. Thank you.
Definitely. Okay, Gary, we already know you a bit better now. We know a few things that you like, a little bit about your background. So we want to, crank it up a notch. turn up the heat in here. So, you're a founder as well. We don't always have founders on the show. I mean, we sometimes do, but it's definitely not a given. It's a little bit more rare. So, I mean, you already said what inspired you to start your first company, why you founded it. But then once you did, what was your first breakthrough? Do you remember? Because I'm sure it's hard to get a business off the ground.
No, I think the first biggest thing that really made us, when you start in a business, you try to be all things to all people, and you are, any dollar is a good dollar, or any currency agnostic, could be euros, could be pounds. And we quickly realized that not all clients are the right clients for us, and we can't possibly be good at everything. And being that my background, once I switched from medicine to law, and I became a lawyer, sort of was the legal training and the financial training. I did the law and MBA program ultimately. I said, we should really focus on what I know of, sort of, I think organizations take, one of my mentors says, the shapes of their leaders. I said, if I am the leader of this organization, we really should focus on legal, financial, something we know well. So mm-hmm. it's a sector that needs, can't afford to screw it up. And this is so important to get it done right. So let's focus on this. Yeah. Let's focus on premium translations around it. And even our AI was heavily trained for that marketplace.
Interesting. Yeah, makes sense. And a very good strategic choice, it sounds like. So then, again, probably not just at the beginning, but also at the beginning or throughout, I think there can be a lot of peaks and valleys, especially when you have your own company. So what were some of the main challenges that you have encountered since you founded your company?
Seeing implementation of technology in the early stages, so introducing essentially CAD tools for the translators in the early days. I mean, it seemed like a no-brainer. I'm sure you've had many people on the show that it's now almost everyone has them. But at the time, it wasn't easy to implement, and you realize quickly, okay, yes, it's needed, but you really need a plan. You need a good sort of quarterback to see it through to make sure there's full implementation. You can't run a business off of spreadsheets, not long term at least, anyway. Yeah. Especially as the size is there and the analytics are needed there. And that learning came in really handy when we acquired the AI technology that we have right now, and we've developed further, because now when we help clients implement it, I take those learnings and I say, you know what, I know exactly the pains of implementing technology. So a big part of our job isn't to just give you a good AI technology. We're going to help you implement it effectively. And our real job starts once you have our AI, because then we can actually help you implement it, learning from those experiences.
That's very nice and very clever. Good that you took that experience and you made it into a strength now as well for your business. So then looking at today, because this was like more of a challenge of the past, what is currently the biggest challenge, let's say, in your day-to-day life at work?
So the challenges evolve, and that's why it keeps our jobs interesting. You never run out of them. It's not like you resolve one and then there's the other. So we are in a new environment in the translation industry where you have a merger of people with technology. I think where the technology and the translators as professionals are going is collaborating with one another very effectively. And if translators use it to its best, they're making their job really high quality, because the boring stuff will be done by the AI and the technology, and the translators focus on the high value add. So we have to make sure that we do that with our internal translators, our internal team, and make sure they have their buy-in. And we use those learnings to then apply to clients. But it's a continuous challenge, because as the AI evolves, how to work with it will also evolve. It doesn't remain consistent over the years. By the same definition, we have a large R&D team, over 40 people in our R&D team now, or rather the tech team, not exclusively R&D team. So 40 people in there, and that's a big development team to have to worry about. But it's just what's happening in the marketplace is such that you have to make sure the technology is evolving, stay on top of what's happening with all the developments out there, and make sure you're utilizing them. You're not reinventing the wheel. To the extent something is being done well out there, you can think, how do I use it to advance our cause better and faster?
Then on the flip side now, what was the biggest success that you can recall? Can you tell us a story?
So the, you know, the having building an amazing team and for perspective, we are three times larger than we were at this time 3 years ago, essentially. Wow. So it's tripled over the last 3 years. Started with our AI acquisition and the successful integration of the team that was there, taking about a year and a half to really train the AI before it was even offered to the clients. So that was a lot of big financial burn because you're burning a lot of money just to make sure all this happened. But then when it was delivered out there, it was really impressive to everyone around us. So you have a highly motivated team because they see this and they are believers in it. And we continue to sort of grow at that pace. By the end of this year, we are projected to be five times as big as we were in 2020.
Wow, that's incredible.
Thank you.
So what is the secret sauce to your success then?
And you know, the secret sauce is that it's really not a huge secret sauce. It is hard work. It is hard work being strategic about it, taking the advice that I got early on, which is don't confuse activity with progress. But if, you know, one of the biggest research done around success, when they interviewed hundreds of founders and CEOs, executives, et cetera, they said, ultimately, the only thing everyone had in common that was consistent was they showed up every day and they gave you their all. So it is that I have to do that, but then also have a team that buys in and can do that. That's really the secret. And without sounding cliche, obviously introducing technology was a great decision. I think the playing technology space and complementing that with professional services was critical because you're helping train the AI. You're not just in the business of selling technology, you're validating that technology and consistently training it with the two divisions working well with one another.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Thank you. And so then what are the three things you spend most of your time on at work aside from profitability, which I'm sure you spend a lot of time on as the CEO?
You know, surprisingly, not as much as I should, but it's I'll tell you what I find extremely valuable. Most of my time is spent sitting down with clients, really having a lot of these conversations, not strictly the sales time, but also once they are clients and you're really spending a lot of time with them, sharing sort of tips on implementation, really sharing with them the strategy, but also learning, what are you encountering? What could we do better? So one of our biggest ways that has made our organization better is sitting down with clients and saying, what would make your life easier? Really listening and then implementing it internally. Mm-hmm. So with that being the first stage, and most of where my time is spent, then it is going to the team and saying to the professional services division, how can our quality be better while still getting faster with time? And with the AI team, same thing. How do you make the AI more efficient, more user-friendly as a platform for people? Mm-hmm. But then the quality also has to get there because the expectation is that you're making the user's lives easier as it evolves.
Can you share some of what, of course, without identifying anybody, but what clients are typically looking for? So aside from, you know, the actual product or the actual translation, but what they are like really looking for from you?
We work with some of the largest financial institutions in the world, largest enterprises. So translation is often a pain point for organizations, but the people that are dealing with it are saying, I want a partner that will make my life simple, that I can say, you're in charge of translation. Every time I have a translation pain point, you take care of it. Mm-hmm. So whether it's with our professional services, where we'll have dedicated teams and have clients really feel like you're simulating an in-house department for them. On the AI front, it's the same way. That effective implementation where you're saying, okay, let's train it for your organization. Now let's train your people effectively. Here are the stages. You really split up in stages for them. With one counterpart on the client's end that can help quarterback it in their process. But ultimately, we take that responsibility of effective implementation because to whoever has been assigned to help us, it's typically not the only job they have. They have other things.
Yeah.
So we need to make their lives easier by having really effective process.
Mm-hmm. So really also like a managed services approach.
Absolutely. And you have to do it like that in order for the clients to get the most value.
Looking back on your career to date, whether that was from when you founded your business or even before, what were the biggest lessons you've learned?
So the number one won't be a surprise to you, just from what we said, is there will be days that are long and hard and disappointing experiences where in the translation world, things are bound to go wrong once in a while, but you have to keep showing up. The day after, you have to shake it off and say, look, we have to become better. How do we learn from this and just become better? Mm-hmm. The second part of it is really building that great team, sort of having a management team that you can lean on, that you know the various divisions and the various aspects of the business are being taken care of by people you can truly rely on. And that's easier said than done. I didn't always get it right. It took a while to get the team that we have now. But that's I think, part of the learning in the process. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is you have to always be in front of your clients. You have to listen to them. Mm-hmm. You can't just give a product and say, okay, here's what we have, use it. You have to say, what do you need? And let's adjust our product based on what you are telling us.
Yeah, I'd say that's a very smart and also super customer-focused approach that I'm sure your clients will appreciate.
I hope so.
Well, I would imagine so. Yeah. So my last question, and then you've made it through the hot seat. What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs who are starting their own business in the language industry today?
The one single piece that is probably the most important is to have a niche early on. There's so many translation providers in all kinds of contexts. And learning from my own experience early on, where we did translation, interpretation, and it was sort of a little broad in offering, it's hard to be really good at too many things at the same time. Especially in the early stages of the business, the more niche they are, the better it will be. Now, presumably, when you're starting a business, you also need as much money as quickly as possible just because you're trying to grow the business. So it's counterintuitive to say, I'm going to turn these things away. But if that discipline is developed to say, by turning this away, I can dedicate more time to finding the right type of client, which in turn will make my life easier, it will pay back. So I would encourage anyone thinking to really think niche and to take my word that although it may seem hard in the short term, long term, it'll be worth it.
That's really good advice. Thank you for sharing that. All right. This is it, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, that was a really great conversation. Thank you for sharing all that.
Anytime. And if there's anything I can ever do in the future, let me know.
If anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you're part of the C-suite at a company in the language services industry, do sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
So this is it for today. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks for listening. And watch out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website.